Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
Everybody regrets not starting sooner, and we're the same way. I think I was early 30s when we started, and if I had started when I was 20-something, who knows where we'd be. So just getting in the game is so important. And then I think when you listen to these podcasts and stuff, they're great, but I think sometimes you can get in your own head.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Best Ever listeners, welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I am your host, Joe Cornwell, and today I'm joined by Joshua Condado and Colin Davis. They are nurses who are also investing in real estate. They have CRNA, All Day Investments, which I was just apprised of what that means. I'll have them explain that to you guys in a little more detail, but they're still working in nursing while investing full-time in real estate. They have a wide variety of experiences that they have invested in, including LP investments and active investments that they are raising capital on. They're based in the Green Bay, Wisconsin area, but it sounds like they're investing all over the Midwest. So Joshua and Colin, thank you guys for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks.
And welcome to Best Ever.
Thanks for having us.
All right, Joshua, why don't we start with you? Give me your background and how you got into real estate.
So it was kind of at the same time as Colin. We have some family that were doing some real estate investments. You mentioned that we're both nurses, so I went back to school to do anesthesia. As soon as I finished anesthesia school, I wanted to start saving up and getting wealthier, just planning for the future. So looking at some of the family that we had doing investments, seeing what they were able to do in a relatively short amount of time, I knew that I wanted to be a part of that and do whatever they were doing. And me and Colin, we'd chat every once in a while whenever we got together for family events and certain things. And at a certain point, we're just like, let's just put our money together and do something. We've been talking about it for a while, so let's just jump in. So that was...
I was going to say, so do you guys work together?
I'm actually in LA.
No. He's in LA.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Whenever we'd get together for like Thanksgiving or holidays, we'd always be talking about what we want to do and just finally decided to just jump in and do something.
Gotcha. And now explain how you're related again. It's through marriage, right? But tell the audience.
Yeah, he married my sister. Colin married my sister.
Okay. So yeah. Brother-in-laws. Got it. Yeah. Okay, continue.
That was kind of it. So we started talking about doing something. We were introduced into podcasts like this one, Bigger Pockets, just all the like the big name real estate podcasts, and binged a lot of those. I don't know, I would say a couple thousand hours of education through podcasts. And then 2019, we started to look for a deal and got our first one in early 2020.
I credit Josh's parents, actually, because they were buying small single family homes pretty cheap. And they weren't making a lot of money off them, but I saw if we had 10 of them by the time I retired, they could all be cash flowing about $500 a month and I'd be making an extra $5,000. And I was like, well, that'd be great on top of my retirement. So that's how it started. We just started looking in small towns in Wisconsin for single family homes. Initially, the only plan was to just have like a little backup for extra income when we retired. And that's kind of how it all started.
Same thing with me. I was in law enforcement and I just thought I'll buy a few properties. By the time I retire, they'll be mostly paid off and pad my retirement a little bit. And then obviously it snowballed from there and ended up leaving my career. But a lot of people have that kind of background where it becomes a bigger business than you initially anticipate. So tell me about your first deal you guys did together.
So as Colin said, we were looking in small town Wisconsin. This is back in 2019. I looked at a couple deals. We ended up closing, like I said, in early 2020 on a single family house for $35,000. Very rural Wisconsin. And this one, honestly, we had done a ton of podcast research and stuff, but really we're not experts on anything. We just figured a house at $35,000, we can make some mistakes and it would still be okay. We ended up putting about $20,000 into it and then refinancing it, and we got all of our money back. And it was after that first deal, I was hooked. I was like, this works. Whatever they're saying is true. They're not all lying. So at that point, I was like, okay, we need to do this a lot, like a million times. Because I was very similar to Colin. I just wanted to get into it for future, maybe retirement planning, like the traditional mom and pop, get a couple houses by retirement. And then after that first one, that's when it was light bulb moment happened, and let's do this a lot. This is kind of powerful.
Yeah. So you guys started with the BRRRR strategy, able to pull all your capital out, which is obviously a home run. Tougher to do today, you certainly. So let's touch on your guys' partnership. So how did you guys define your roles? What did they look like when you first started?
And yeah, I think that was one of our biggest mistakes. Everybody says don't work with family, and it has worked for us, but there's been drama along the way. And something we didn't do in the beginning was defining our roles very clearly. And we get along great, and so it worked out. But I could see how in other instances it wouldn't have turned out so well. But Josh being local to the Wisconsin area, he was kind of our boots on the ground guy. So he'd go out and meet with the contractors and that kind of stuff. I was actually sourcing a lot of the contractors and interviewing them over the phone and setting everything up. So Josh just had to go meet with them. We were just joking around yesterday about how Josh earned more from that house because he went over there and did some manual labor trying to remove some bushes, which ended up taking hours that he could have just hired out for like $200.
Yeah. I spent like 8 hours to remove 4 bushes, and I think I only got to like 2 of them. And
yeah,
we were just so excited to have our first deal. We wanted everything to go great. We were just ready to do whatever it took.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that because there's so many things like that, right? As investors, especially when you first start out. The big one for me was drywall. The first couple properties, I didn't have much capital. So I tried to drywall, right? I'm like, yeah, I watch some YouTube videos. I don't know if you remember those old like Home Depot manuals, like read some of those handyman manuals. I think I got some behind me actually. And it's like, oh, this seems simple enough. But it's like putting a good finish on drywall when you have no idea what you're doing is extremely time consuming. And if you don't do it every day, it is a complete waste of your time. So I quickly learned that paying drywallers what it costs is one of those things in a rehab that is a much bigger ROI than your own time putting into it.
Absolutely. And with our first deal, we were trying to save every single penny that we had. So we figured it doesn't matter how long it takes. We are, I don't want to say capital poor, but we're just don't know what to expect. So we're just trying to save as much money as we can along the way. Definitely would not do it the same way if we had that same deal today, but it got us to where we are now, so I would do it all again.
So how has your guys' partnership dynamic changed over the last 4 years? Obviously, you guys, sounds like, had some loosely defined roles in the beginning, or obviously, you're physically on site, so you had the ability to do some of those on-site necessities, but how has that changed?
It's changed several times, not just one change. It keeps changing. I say keeps changing. I think our roles are pretty well defined now, but it changed more than one time throughout the last 4 years. The first couple deals, honestly, we were just all doing whatever we needed to do, very loosely defined, like, hey, we need you to do this, just whatever it took, basically. And so my sister, Colin's wife, she was doing the property management. Both of them together were doing a lot of the stuff that can be done remotely, phone calls, tenant screening, all the stuff that you can do remotely. And it was very loosely defined that me and Colin were partners, but my sister was not officially a part of the group. So our most recent split now, it's we're all equal thirds partners. She's doing property management, Colin's doing operations and deal flow, and then I'm doing financing and boots on the ground-ish. I don't have to go see a lot of our properties, but
one of the things that really helped us too is we hired a business coach about 9 months ago, and one of the first things he did with us was had us take the Intermetrics or DISC assessment test, and it kind of tells you what you already know, but it really lays out who you are and how you like to be interacted with. And it put us in the right positions and the right seats we were supposed to be in. And having a third party person look at that, a neutral person look at that and place us where we needed to be, helped out a lot. And to a certain extent, reinforced what we were already doing and what we already knew. But it was just good and understanding how to communicate with each other a little better, because communication's been one of our biggest challenges throughout the last 4 years.
It makes complete sense. I'm in a few partnerships of my own. They're all a little bit different, and there are obviously unique challenges that come up in every partnership. So one of the things you mentioned before we started was that some of your deal structures have been in creative ways. So if you want to have one in mind that you want to share with us, we can kind of dive into it.
First mobile home park we bought was a seller carry, and that one was kind of cool just because it kind of highlights some of our inadequacies. I don't know what the right word is, but it's just, anyways, we found this deal. So this is Josh's cousin does mobile home parks, and he came across this deal and he pitched it off to us. It was in Wisconsin. He wasn't familiar with the market, so he said, hey, you should look at this, it's a good deal. I think he'd already talked to the guy and knew the guy was willing to carry, so went in knowing that as I was going into negotiations. And the guy wanted $600,000. It was a 20 pad park. I think he had 16 lots full. And he was willing to carry somewhere between 20 and 30%. This is kind of like one of those things, you know, you listen to all these podcasts, and it's kind of like the first time we did the BRRRR. You know people are doing this, and you know it's out there, but it's hard to wrap your mind around the fact that it's actually real. And then we were able to negotiate this 20%. He carried, I think, at like 5% for 5 years or 3 years. But the only thing we were supposed to pay for was the appraisal and the legal fees. And we wrote the check for the appraisal and hadn't transferred the money in our accounts, and it bounced. And the bank rolled our appraisal fees into the loan. So literally closing day, the only thing we came out of pocket was, I think, like $800 for legal fees. And we got this park for $600,000. It appraised for $760,000 on closing. And it was just this like aha moment of, dang, this really happens. Like, yeah.
Another one. There's been a lot of aha light bulb moments along the way.
So what was the motivation for the seller in this deal to carry the down payment?
That's a great question. We just asked him and he was comfortable with it.
So basically just to get the deal done effectively. I mean, he didn't have any specific situation where that made most sense for him.
Right. No, he's just a good dude, I guess. We explained to him why we were asking for that. And he's like, yeah, that makes sense. And a lot of these mobile home park owners, they're business owners. They understand these things. And I'm sure he probably put himself in our shoes. He's like, I guess if I was trying to buy this, I'd want that too. And just made sense for him. He didn't need all the money right away. So he's comfortable with carrying for...
He's an investor too. So he has some investment properties. So he understood the whole seller carry thing. And like Josh said, he didn't need all the money right away. He was trying to do some project. And I didn't really go after his asking price. It was off market, and I didn't really try and negotiate on the asking price. I was like more interested in terms at that point. So I was 600 seems reasonable. We could do that if you were willing to carry this. And it just worked out. And it was cash flow in day one with no money out of pocket too, which was awesome. And I think on closing, because he had some people paying annually. So on closing day, it appraised for 160 more. And then I think we got like a $30,000 check on closing day. So it was just a very eye-opening moment for us of just, okay, we just got to do more of this.
Yeah. So you said your cousin found this off-market, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And how did he find this?
I don't think we know. It's like an email list or something.
Yeah, I remember asking him. He's like, oh, man, I'm on so many email lists at this point. I probably couldn't find it again if I wanted to.
So like a wholesaler, was it the seller was actually emailing it out himself for sale by owner, or a broker had it? A pocket listing?
It might have been a cold call. I'm not sure. It might have been on some sort of list.
Oh, a list you pulled. I got you. Not an email list. Okay, I see.
Yep.
Cool. So catch us up to today. Obviously, we've talked about some of the different deals you've done. What does your portfolio look like today? What types of deals are you looking
for? So we've kind of shifted just specifically to mobile home parks. We had some smaller multifamily that we sold off in like 2021, 2022 when the market was doing pretty well. We didn't plan on selling them when we bought them, but it just worked out. So now we've got 4 mobile home parks, a single family, a fourplex, and a couple duplexes in Green Bay. And I think it's like 95 economically occupied, and then like 110 if you include all the pads we own that we're trying to fill. And that's what we're focusing on now, is just mobile home parks in the Midwest.
And I know you mentioned you had a couple other deals you're pursuing.
Mobile home parks. There's one we just closed on in Michigan, and then there's another one we have under contract in Nebraska. They're both mobile home parks.
Okay. Let's look at that a little deeper. So with the mobile home parks, what is the size, the scope? What type of deal is in your buy box?
I guess we got to define that.
Yeah. I would say medium-sized. We're going after, ideally...
Okay, what is that? Yeah, what is medium?
50 to 100 pads would be ideal. But our first several deals have been like 20 pads. And if it's a good deal, it's really hard to pass on something that's a good deal. So I guess in the grand scheme of things, it's like 20 to 100 pads.
Okay. Why?
We stay out of private equity money. Once you get over 100 pads, they start to bring in some, I don't want to call it dumb money. They just have a lot more than we do. And they're able to pay a lot higher prices than we want to. It doesn't make sense for us to buy those deals because there's too much big money competition.
Okay. And what type of parks? Give me an example of a ideal park.
Definitely city, water, sewer. The first two parks we bought were septic and well. And then just to get started, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You hear a lot of people talking about like, oh, don't buy this, don't buy this. But at a certain point, you got to just get started. And if that's what's there and that's what it's going to take to get you in the game, I think you should go for it. And we did. And we just had to replace our well pump. It was about $8,000. It didn't kill the deal by any means, but it was definitely an expensive cost. But now we're looking, more city, water, sewer. Paved roads, if we have them, all utilities built directly to tenants, submetered, whatever we can find. But we're doing cold calling now, so we're looking for all off-market stuff. And we've seen the potential for wholesaling deals that we don't want. So we're still just kind of casting a wide net, because if we come across something and it doesn't work for us, we have brokers we work with, and we can potentially just wholesale them ourselves. But specifically for what we're looking for, yeah, it's more those established communities. And tenant-owned homes is huge for us. We're not really into the park-owned homes just because the amount of work it takes. And then you're just managing these shabby little units, and that can be a headache.
We'll get back to the show. But first, some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. If you're an investor like me, you're probably looking for one platform to manage the banking and finance needs of your entire portfolio. The good news is, there is one. It's called Baselane. And it's the number one banking platform built for independent real estate investors that reduces busy work so you can focus on growing your business. With Baselane, you can earn up to a 4.19% annual percentage yield and 5% cash back on debit card spending with no monthly fees. With a simplified view of your cash flow and expenses, you can retire those tedious spreadsheets. You can also manage unlimited virtual accounts and cards, and even open separate accounts for each property or unit. Join more than 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselane for their banking, property management, and bookkeeping. Head over to baselane.com/Joe and sign up today for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. That's baselane.com/Joe.
I don't own any mobile home parks or invest in any, but I'm going to make the assumption, as most real estate asset classes, where the more difficult a property is for whatever reason, right? You mentioned some things. Let's say it is septic, or let's say it is private water, or it is a lot of park-owned homes, all those things, right? It's going to create a smaller and smaller buyer pool because people don't want to deal with those types of headaches, right? So that creates opportunity for the buyers who are willing to, because they're going to theoretically get a better deal. And I think for the listeners, you can extrapolate that out to every asset class. Right? I do a lot of small to mid-sized multifamily, and I buy the stuff no one wants to buy. I burr as well, but I buy the stuff that needs foundation replacement. I buy the stuff that needs beam, joist, and all those things that 99% of buyers aren't going to deal with. I also have a construction company, right? So that helps because I can do all that stuff in-house. But again, buying those types of problems that nobody else wants to deal with is going to give you more leverage in a competitive market that we're in today. And speaking of that, I know you mentioned cold calling, but how are you setting yourself apart from the other hundreds and thousands of buyers out there that are looking for these types of deals to make sure you win the deal?
I'd say just relationships. Once we do get somebody on the phone, from the cold caller, it comes to me. And then just talking to these people, I'm in LA, so talking to people in the Midwest is easy. They're just so friendly and nice and unassuming. And I'll call, and the first thing they'll say is, no, I'm not interested in selling. And then we'll talk for about 30 minutes. So these people that are interested in selling, it's just establishing that connection over the phone, and then just being able to follow up regularly, establishing that relationship. Josh and I just did a big drive back in February where we went through Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and we were looking at some parks that we had talked to the owners on, and we spent a couple hours with one particular guy who's an older guy. And just from the relationship we've established over the last few months of me just calling him and following up, he told us, when I sell, you're number one when I sell. And it's just through that continual follow-up and establishing that connection.
Yeah. Very cool. Anything you want to add to that, Josh?
No, I'll second everything he just said. Colin's great on the phones, but I think really just meeting people in person. Colin had been talking to that particular seller for a while, but I think it wasn't until we actually met him, shook his hand. He's an older gentleman, very traditional. He's like, I got a lot of calls about this thing, but I want to sell to you guys. You guys are some good guys. So just establishing the relationship in person, especially.
That makes a ton of sense. Having that face-to-face is really important when you're trying to do off-market deals. Something you mentioned earlier, talking about seller financing, it's funny because I have tried to do a bunch of off-market deals with seller financing, but typically the sellers that aren't sophisticated with real estate investing, it's such a fear. They have such a fear objection to trying to do that. Or they're like, yeah, I'm interested in doing that. But then the terms they want to give you are worse than the banks, right? They're like, yeah, I'll do a 1-year balloon at 8% interest with 40% down or whatever. It's like, well, I can go to the bank and get better terms than that. So it doesn't make any sense to do that. So have you guys done any more of those seller finance type deals, or was that the only one?
I think every single deal that we've done has been a little bit differently. We haven't done anything the exact same. So another one that we've done is established by relationships, meeting with the seller, all that stuff we've talked about already. But this particular seller, he wanted to sell at a higher price than we were able to reasonably pay. But we went back and forth creatively. And how that deal actually ended up was he stayed on as a 24% partner in the deal. So we got that one also with no money out of pocket. The bank recognized his equity position as enough collateral. So we came out of pocket with no money for that deal. And he's a partner. And he wasn't really looking to sell that one at first, aside from, because he owns, it was five parks. And the other four, they were all in the same area. This one was out of his local market. And it was just a headache. He didn't like driving to it. But he knew it was a good deal. So that's why he was comfortable staying in on the deal. And that one was established by us meeting him. And he got to know us. And he's like, these are good dudes. I'm comfortable staying on as a partner in this deal.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to add for the listeners who may be considering doing their first mobile home park investment or any of the types of investments you guys are looking at?
Just get in and do something, because the most common real estate investor will buy one deal and that's it. But once you start doing a few deals, like all these creative deals that we've done, they would not have been possible unless the seller saw that we had done more than that, that we could be creative and that we were good people. So the more you do, the more creativity that you can bring to the table. When we first started, we never would have thought that we'd be able to buy a $600,000 or $800,000 property with no money out of pocket. That just seemed crazy. So the more you do, the more you'll see what's possible. And just get your first deal, because then the second deal is a little bit easier.
Yeah, we nursing investing podcast, and every person we interview, we ask them a question at the end about what would you tell people to do? And it's just like, get started now. Everybody we've talked to, it's just like, start, because everybody regrets not starting sooner, and we're the same way. I think I was early 30s when we started, and if I had started when I was 20-something, who knows where we'd be. So just getting in the game is so important. And then I think when you listen to these podcasts and stuff, they're great, but I think sometimes you can get in your own head like, oh yeah, but this person, because that's what I used to think. I'd be like, oh yeah, but that worked for this person because they're whatever. And it's like, we're two very average dudes. We're nothing special. Like, we're not like construction specialists or anything, but we just started doing it. And you learn as you go, and you're going to make mistakes, but you just got to get in it and get started.
Yeah, it is easy to look at other people's perceived advantages and use that as an excuse. Like, oh, I would if I would have, should have, could have type stuff. So no, that's great advice. I think you just have to set your mind to it, be unwilling to quit. And that's how you have success in life. So my last question before we transition to our lightning round is, you guys are still working, from my understanding, at least part-time in your nursing careers. Is the plan to continue doing that? Do you guys have a path to go full-time in real estate? What are your thoughts and plans on that?
When we first got started, that was not the plan. It was just long-term wealth, be nice to own some houses and have them paid off. That's changed a lot over the last few years. But I've seen the advantages of having more than one option. So the amount of freedom that it brings mentally and physically or whatever, just being able to do whatever I want to. I like working in the hospital, being in surgery. That's a lot of fun. It's very rewarding, fulfilling. But I also like the ability to say, hey, I think I'm good. I might take a year off. Or just to have more than one option for the rest of my life is huge.
The real estate thing, I think we're definitely pursuing that more full time now. We have nursing. Like I said, I've been out of it for a couple years. I was managing a building in Los Angeles that was enough to get me out for a couple of years, but I'll be going back to it. It's nice to have it. And as long as we need it, it's there. So that's our plan. It's like, we're going to keep pursuing this real estate thing, but not needing it to be anything for us. Just when the time comes and it's right, we're all good with what we do. And obviously the sooner, the better. The sooner we can get out or have it be optional, the better, but we're just pursuing this as something else. And we're always doing different things. So we definitely have shiny object syndrome. So that's probably slowed us down a little bit, but
we did for a couple of years. We don't really.
Yeah, but like I
anymore,
said, we then started a podcast, which that takes time away from what the time I can spend in real estate, because now we're trying to build this other thing. So our focus has shifted a bit, where before we were like all in on real estate. Like, this is going to replace our incomes. This is going to retire us. And then we realized that can be a longer game depending on the way you do it. And that is the one thing I will say, you know, the way we're buying these deals, highly leveraged. They are cash flowing day one, but it's not like they're making like thousands of dollars a month. But we're looking at big picture. We're like, hey, if we can get any kind of property for no money out of pocket that's cash flowing day one, as far as I'm concerned, that's a win. But it's not going to get us out of nursing tomorrow. So we're aware of that and just trying to course correct and pursue things accordingly. So it's been good. A lot of adjustments, but it's been good.
Yeah, you guys had so many great nuggets in there. Obviously, pursuing the work optional lifestyle, I think that's what all of us have done or pursuing. Having that focus, as you mentioned, not having the shiny object syndrome. I'm 8 years into investing, and I still struggle with that. I'll learn a new strategy or I learn a new niche, and it kind of completely diverts my attention, even though the things I was doing the last 5 years were working great. So it's difficult. Almost you kind of get bored of doing things, even if they're successful over and over.
We actually,
so that's great advice for the listener.
I was going to say, we blame Ash,
go ahead.
The other host. We almost bought a grocery store because of him.
He'll love to hear that. Yeah, he loves to convert people from residential to commercial. So he'll get a kick out of that. All right, awesome guys. I appreciate all the wisdom. Are you guys ready to go to the best ever lightning round?
Let's do it.
All right, Josh, I'm going to have you answer all of these first. So Colin will go next. So the first question is, what is your best ever book recommendation?
The One Thing by Gary Keller. I don't read a lot of books, but that one was one that I was told to read, and I read it, and it was great because, like I said, shiny object syndrome has not eluded us completely, so that one really helped.
Colin, what about you?
I'd say right now I'm reading How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie, and that one, for me being in deal flow, it's really important because I'm like the door opener, I guess you could say. So that one's been really helpful.
All right, what about the best ever way you like to give back?
I guess it goes back to the podcast we started. So we're both nurses, and we see a huge need in the nursing community because burnout is real. It's real in every career, but we see it more because we are nurses and we see it in the nursing community. So just trying to help nurses get their first deal or just open their eyes to what other things are possible of how we're giving back right now.
It's the same. Just people are great. Just helping people. And if you can help one person, so rewarding to just give somebody hope, I guess. That's all we're looking for.
Yeah, obviously coming from law enforcement, like I said, I left in 21, very similar situation, right? Obviously pre-COVID, during COVID, all the volatility in law enforcement, obviously nursing had their own separate issues, and I completely relate to that journey. Cops are less receptive to investing and trusting people with their money and things like that. Hopefully nurses are a little more open-minded, but it's a great thing you guys are trying to accomplish. Okay, next question is, give me a deal you made a mistake on and a lesson you guys learned from it, if you guys maybe have one in mind.
That's an easy one. The second deal we ever bought, we knew it was going to be a full rehab. So our first deal we got for $35,000, our second deal we bought for $23,000 and knew it was going to be a full gut rehab, everything. So we skipped an inspection. That was a mistake. Going back, definitely would get an inspection because we made it 2 years down the road. It took 2 years to complete that rehab. Partially because of the contractor, partially just because it was way more than we ever thought it would be. And found out that there was a fire in the attic at some point, and we just had no idea about it until we were about to sell, finally, after 2 years.
What was the outcome of that?
We didn't lose money on the deal, surprisingly. That just kind of goes to show that real estate's pretty forgiving if you hold something long enough. I think we made like $1,000 or something, or broke even, I don't remember. But it was pretty close to break even after 2 years of headaches. And we sold
that last year. Yeah.
When did we sell that? A year ago? I don't remember.
But I think the big takeaway was kind of going back to when you're a new investor and you're cutting corners and you're trying to save money here and there. And this one wasn't even necessarily that. We just had the contractor essentially examine the whole thing knowing we were going to do it. But it was an inspection, like $500. Maybe we would have walked away from the deal. Maybe we just would have known what to expect or whatever. But don't cut corners to save a couple $100 because it costs you a lot more in the long run.
Stepping over dollars to save pennies.
Yeah, and confidence can also be something that can get you too. As I mentioned, let's say you had three or four of those go really well. That's going to give you a ton of confidence, sometimes false confidence, where, like you said, you missed something because, well, this wasn't a problem the last four or five times. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that the future is going to be the same. So that's great advice. My last question is, where can the audience connect with you guys, learn more about what you're doing, and reach out?
We have our podcast, Investing RN. There's a YouTube channel, and we have a Instagram handle, Investing RN Pod. Instagram is probably where we're the most active. We put a lot of what we're doing on there. If you guys want to go follow us, especially if you're a nurse.
That's the same. I have a personal account, but I always joke around about how I have 500,000 followers. But it's like, yeah, I don't really do much personal stuff. So it's just through the podcast page.
Cool. Well, we'll be sure to link to that in the show notes. Josh and Colin, thank you guys so much for giving us your time today and sharing your story. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and, thank you.
Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Joe.
Best ever listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to leave us a 5-star review. Share this episode with someone who could benefit from it. And make sure you follow and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss anything. Thank you all and have a best ever day.
Hi, best ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, Join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access and you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.